Rich Kimble, Kerry Haskell, Bruce Pratt. Time for this week's edition of Sports Lit 101. And Bruce, going to talk about, well, one of the classics of sport literature.
Yeah, I'd say in many ways a book that really in the 90s began defining what sport literature is supposed to be. And this, the version I'm going to talk about is the latest one, which includes an afterword. It was in 2011. This came out in 1992. I think the author, Nick Hornby, is probably best known to Americans as the guy who wrote the book High Fidelity, right, and the great John Cusack movie. And one of the things about that movie is if you've seen that movie, you will understand ahead of time why you want to read Fever Pitch, because it's really about obsession. And, right, and you know, we think of all the literature, the songs, the poems, the novels that have been written for everything from, you know, Somerset Maugham to others who wrote about obsession. This is interesting because this really is Nick Hornby, I always want to say Hornsby, Nick Hornby telling his life to us through his obsession with Arsenal, one of the, Football League division championships of the Premier League in England. Now, our friend Bernard Hope said it's a wonderful book about the worst football team in the world because he's a Tottenham Hotspurs fan, the arch rivals of Arsenal. The thing I think that most Americans, and certainly I only understand this because I had an Australian and a Scotsman who teaches in Australia explain it to me, Dr. Casey Simons and Dr. Lee McGowan. Casey does a lot of writing about Australian sports, especially women's football and women's Australian rules football. And I don't think we can really understand in this country the kind of fanaticism that goes with professional soccer in England, because quick, name the other important professional sports in England. Has anyone ever watched a broadcast of, well, cricket, I suppose, but no one's ever watched a broadcast of English basketball or baseball or ice hockey or whatever. This is the sport that is clearly the one that the world associates with England. England, you don't, you know, maybe horse racing or steeple racing or steeplechase, something like that, fox hunting. But people don't think of the English involved in other sports. We also forget that it is a game which is very much part of the urban culture of the British Isles, of Ireland, of the Western Europe, because it's a game that I want to say this. I don't mean to insult the game, but you don't need a lot of equipment. You don't need a lot of space to practice. And while you need to have enough athleticism to play the game, being a gifted natural athlete doesn't necessarily make you a great soccer player. You have to know more about the game. It's the same way with you take a great natural athlete like Bodie Miller. Bodie Miller could have played any sport he wanted to play. I have no doubt about that whatsoever. I think it's true he never lost a tennis match in his entire time at CVA, or maybe even it was a game. But what Hornby does is he breaks this book down into sections, and it starts out 1968 to 1975, and it's about how he becomes an Arsenal soccer fan. His dad takes him to a game. His parents will soon split up, and his father will live abroad in much better than modest means, and his mother will continue to be his primary caregiver, and they will live in a modest home in suburban London. His identity becomes defined because he's an Arsenal fan. He does not miss home games. He finds a way to go to every single one of them. He will spend whatever money he has today. He will play soccer with a in small confined areas with a tennis ball with his friends. He will begin to see that Arsenal is part of his life, and he goes from a fan to an obsessive. And what's interesting is he doesn't, though, become an English soccer hooligan, of which, and he writes a lot about that, and that is not something that has disappeared no matter what people might think. And what is a soccer hooligan? Well, a lot of people would say that the Liverpool fans have crafted that to an art, but there are hooligans among all the fans of all the teams. Why? Because an awful lot of young men are attracted to this game, and the violence that goes with clashing with your rivals, whether it be in the streets, the stadium, and also in what we don't have in this country, and I think it's great we don't, are stadiums that they have for soccer. Now, I've been to the famous one in Dortmund with the famous yellow wall, which is revered among English and German and all soccer football fans. It's a huge stadium. It's a beautiful facility. But what you have is very steep risers. If you think of yourself as walking up the bleachers in a high school gymnasium, and they're made of stone, and there are hundreds of them going up, and instead of sitting, you stand, and there are these iron railings with openings every so often, and you have thousands of people, many of whom are beyond intoxicated, and there's a lot of cheering. Now, this is not like the student section at the Alfond Arena, where the cheers are clever, and yes, they stand for the entire game, and they get on the opposition, but they do it in a fine way. I don't think anybody complains about that. But what Hornby goes into is how do you remain an Arsenal fan and then hear people making monkey noises when an opposing player of African heritage has the ball? How do you stand by and watch a Jewish player, get control of the ball and people start giving Hitler salutes? And he talks about his very complicated relationship with soccer and how he eventually leaves the place where you stand and moves into the better seats, not just because he can afford to do it, but because he really is having trouble sometimes keeping his mouth shut and he doesn't want to get clobbered. He's up in the tonier seats near the end of the book, and this is really a sad, sad thing. And he hears some guy taunting a player, making racist taunts at a player, and he turns around, and the fan is blind.
Oh, God.
He says, "I've got a blind racist behind me, and I don't even know what to say." And so he talks about the way, and this reminded me sort of the way we are with masks at the moment. You see some clown in Hannaford who's got his MAGA hat on, and I'm not going to wear a mask sign on his chest, and I live in a free country and all that crap. And you want to say something, but by the same token, you don't want to engender violence against you or others.
Right.
What I find remarkable in this is one of the most interesting and introspective sports literature books. It's one thing to talk about your affection for a team. And he talks about some things where I think, Rich, you and I would disagree with him. He says, for instance, if you've been a season ticket holder for 31 years to a team, you're more a part of that team than a guy who plays for him for six games. Now, I don't necessarily agree with that, but I started to understand what he was saying in terms of that when I thought about Red Sox fans. And I thought about when they take Willoughby out and there's a bloop single and the Red Sox lose the World Series. My brother-in-law tells a story walking past the old granary on his way back to his home. And I think he was living in Cambridge then, may have been in Watertown. And a guy took an American flag and a Red Sox pennant, rather, and stuck it in the graveyard and turned to my brother-in-law and said, "They never should have took out Willow." Now, that kind of affection for your team, that kind of, especially for teams that had the Red Sox that had such a long drought before they had the big moment. Hornby talks about that, about how, if you're an Arsenal fan, you're with them when they win and you're with them when they lose, and you can win and have a couple of great years in a row, and then you can have long, long stretches where nothing works, and that some people just, well, they're not doing well, I'm not going to the game. He's going rain, snow, sleet, broiling sun, it doesn't make a difference. I go to the game, that's what I do. On Wednesday, I go to the Wednesday games at a away game at another pitch, and I may have to take part of the morning off from work because I get back so late. But what I think this book does, and what I would, and why I would think anybody who has an obsessive person in their life or finds themselves to be obsessive should really read this, because I think it will help them understand that sometimes you can grow out of these things. I remember once a long time ago, you and I talking about how in the 70s, we probably could have given the starting nine for almost every American League team. I can't even tell you the starting lineup for the New York Yankees is now. There was a time I could have told you the names of every player on the roster.
Right. Well, life changes things. Yeah. Priorities change. And I know for me, and baseball's always been the sport that I've followed the closest, probably with pro football a close second, but with baseball, it was sort of the combination of becoming a dad, but also the success the Red Sox had in this century that, you know, when you're riding that 86-year drought, there's a bit more investment there. And then you win one. Okay, great. You win a second one. I don't want to say you become complacent, but it's never going to be the same.
Right. And then so many people expected that once you win, you're going to win them all after that. I mean, right. I can remember as a kid when the Yankees, it was not 1960, sometime in the late 1950s, I'm thinking, well, this is really great because we get to play in the World Series every year.
Well, and they did for like 10 out of 11 years.
10 out of 11 years. Like and then in 1963, the Dodgers take us four straight. And I'm like, whoa, what's going on here? And Mel Allen is in tears at the end of game four. And Mickey Mantle looks like a crippled old guy. And I'm thinking, what is going on here? But for Hornby, it's almost better when they don't win. And get close because then you're not thinking about, oh, next year we might not win again. But the other thing I should mention, this is an extraordinarily well-written book. And it's people talked about it being laugh out funny. There were times I was laughing so hard, tears were starting to come out of my eyes. When he looks at some of his really bizarre, his sort of bizarre behavior. But I'm glad that I finally read it. My friends have been telling me to read it for years, and I kept saying, I don't like soccer. I've gone to games. I've seen them. I've seen people I cared about play. When I coached at BAPST, I used to go over and watch soccer, and I just don't get why people like it, right? But it's one of the most popular games in the world, and this is some of the best sports writing you'll read.
Excellent. Nick Hornby.
Yeah, Nick Hornby, Fever Pitch, and I'm looking forward to reading some of his fiction. I have not read any of his fiction.
And didn't he, as I recall, he also teamed up with friend of downtown, Ben Folds, a few years ago on an album where he wrote all the lyrics and Ben Folds wrote the music.
Yeah, and I think there might be a mention in here of that in the... No, I read it. So yeah, I read it when I was doing some research for it. But yeah, and he's an interesting guy because... You know, relationships early in his life, hey, football comes first. You know? And he talks about how his wife is very indulgent, and if she weren't, he's not sure things would work out the way they do, because even though he's missed a few home games, he still thinks about it.
Sports Lit 101 Wednesdays here on Downtown.